The door to my room was just off the common area. I could hear them outside my room down the short hallway, but I didn't care because now I was sweating and hot, and then that stopped. And then I was freezing cold, and I fought it by stripping down to my underwear. Then I was burning hot again, so I fought that too by wrapping myself in whatever blankets I had. And then it cycled again, and again. Overall, maybe 5 cycles of each? I don't honestly remember. More than 4, less than 8. The worst part was what I saw in the mirror afterwards. I looked up at myself in the mirror, and my face and hands and arms looked yellow. I looked again, thinking that I was seeing something with the lights, but no, a pale yellow film had settled over my skin. I didn't imagine it. It was there, faint but real, the kind of thing that makes you realize your liver or kidneys or something is screaming quietly through chemistry. I grabbed a washcloth and wet it and began to furiously scrub at my skin. And the yellow waxy substance? It came off on the wash rag. I figured that was bad. I then tried to inform the people who take care of crazy people that a crazy thing had happened to me. Let's just say they weren't upset by it. Nobody really asked. Nobody really noticed. Just another guy in the ward feeling a little off after dinner. The second night. That night, no sleep, just completely, utterly awake. Despite having been up for nearly 2 weeks straight, my mind refused to shut down. It wasn't manic energy or anxious spiraling. It was like something biochemical had jammed open the switch that allows sleep. I wasn't thinking rapidly or erratically. I was just on, endlessly on. There's a kind of terror in that, not in the thoughts themselves, but in the absence of off. In the morning, I finally had my one-on-one with Dr. Nakamoto. He was friendly, relaxed. He said he'd prescribe some Klonopin to help me sleep. I was grateful, honestly. At that point, I would have taken anything. He still seemed convinced I was bipolar and, without much discussion, upped my dose of lithium, even though the first dose hadn't even had time to show an effect. Spoiler, I'm not bipolar. You'd know by 56. There was no observation window, no wait and see, just the next adjustment, more lithium, push the button, harder. That day, I went through the motions. Every meal triggered the same cascade of symptoms, feeling intoxicated, polyuria, repeated flushing and freezing sensations, and then the orange film. Plus, now I was nauseated most of the time, and it was so cold all the time. I even asked for my slippers from home since I could only wear shoes that had no laces. Nothing was right, and no one cared. I spent the day trying to orient myself to this strange new world. I met some of the other residents, including an older woman who actually was bipolar and had kidney problems. She had a fierce intelligence under the fog, and something about her demeanor made me feel like I wasn't completely alone. But I couldn't shake the feeling that something else, something internal and physiological, was spiraling out of control inside me. I didn't tell Nakamoto about the polyuria. I should have, but the truth is, getting a message to him felt like trying to file a motion in court with no lawyer and no idea where the courtroom was. The whole system was closed off, deliberately so. After that brief morning meeting, I didn't see him again for days. The second night, they gave me 5 milligrams of Klonopin. If you're familiar with benzodiazepines, you know that's certainly enough. Now that I've taken that medication off and on for years, sometimes a quarter of a milligram at night to sleep, I can tell you with full confidence, 5 milligrams is a lot. It's not standard. It's a shut-down-the-system dose. Honestly, I was grateful. I don't remember falling asleep, but I do remember waking up convinced I was having a heart attack. The pain in my chest was crushing, not metaphorically, but physically. I was clutching my sternum, panicked but lucid, and stumbled out into the hallway, gasping for help. The only staff member on duty looked stunned as I tried to explain what I was feeling, an intense, sustained pressure across my chest. No racing thoughts, no doom spiral, just pure, unrelenting pain. No shortness of breath, just someone squeezing my heart. Eventually, they called someone to take my vitals. Blood pressure, pulse, but there was no urgency. The pain didn't resolve in 10 minutes. It didn't come in waves. It was continuous, brutal, and lasted 4 hours. Let me say this clearly. That is not how panic attacks work. Panic attacks can feel overwhelming. They can be terrifying, but they don't bring hours of crushing, localized chest pain that wakes you from sedation and leaves you barely able to walk. Something was wrong, and no one seemed to be listening. Day 3. So I did what I always do. I searched. On the other side of the counter in the common area of my mental institution, I noticed they had some medical manuals. There were just a few. I like reading. I like figuring out puzzles. So I spent all my time in their books. There were two that I ended up in the most. They both had excellent indexes in the back. You could look up polyuria and it would list every single page that word appeared on. That was cool. Indexes. I wasn't really reading for pleasure. I was hunting. I searched by keywords, using symptoms, building mental decision trees, trying to find a diagnosis that actually matched what I was experiencing. Two possibilities emerged. The first was basic polyuria, excess urination, but it didn't begin to encompass the full spectrum of what was happening to me. The second stood out, not just because it matched more of my symptoms, but because of how it was presented. It was formatted differently, set apart. It was labeled a rare condition and had pages of detailed explanation, charts, diagrams, photos. Not one of those vague behavioral disorders with a paragraph of criteria. This was something else. Specific, organic, documented, but really complicated compared to everything else I had read about in the manual. It was a lot. And the condition they started with looked like my condition, but then it got all weird. So I checked out the other options. But I kept coming back to it. Over and over, the article mentioned adrenal damage in all of the early subjects. At the time, it didn't strike me as important. I didn't think I had adrenal damage, but maybe. The cases they described didn't begin exactly the same way mine did. Their origin point was different, but the path? Yes, the path was similar. It checked the most boxes. This was my diagnosis somehow, but it was actually my diagnosis inside another condition. It turns out those subjects all had adrenal damage. I thought maybe I did too, but I had no idea at the time, and honestly, it wasn't a priority, not compared to the nausea, the blood pressure swings, polyuria that would not stop. Adrenal glands don't announce their exit, they just stop helping. It was complicated. The article was really about the outcome of the treatment for the condition, but the progression aligned, and incredibly, it did have a treatment. Actually, it had two treatments. That's just one reason why the article was so difficult to find and understand. It starts with one condition that I had, but the article was about the strange outcome of the treatment and attempting to diagnose someone with that condition more later. So even that treatment was really buried inside this article on the iatrogenic condition. That modern-day treatment would involve an ethanol IV and a stop and restart of the heart, basically rebooting its dual CPUs. The heart's nodes were somehow malfunctioning. That caused a change in the rhythm of heartbeats and the strength of them. You'd think that would show up on an EKG, but evidently somehow this complete reversal makes the impulses look almost like they should, while actually completely rearranging the strength and sequence of beats of the heart chamber, resulting in suction in the inferior vena cava. Okay, that was a lot, I know. Even your illustrious author and chat together could not make up something this complicated. But even with the new, more conventional approach, the person would need lifelong dialysis due to kidney damage. That's what the article said. Points off on that for sure. This article wasn't even about the condition I was experiencing in that moment. Not directly. It was about the people who had gone through it. The ones who ended up with the same onrush, the same relentless system dumping urination, the electrolyte collapse I was drowning in at that very moment. It didn't study how to prevent it. It studied the ones who got that far. What it found was strange. There were patterns. A certain body type, a shorter of stature but lanky, long-limbed, illustrated by a drawing of body type. A history of dehydration in childhood. Not one or two cases, most of the subjects had these traits. It wasn't framed as causal, exactly, but it hinted at something, a predisposition, a vulnerability, something about the way they were built or wired that brought them to that edge. And the treatment? Harsh. The article hinted in one part that it had later been investigated for the Super Soldier program, something that could rewire electrolyte handling, boost endurance, alter fluid distribution at a systemic level. That certainly seemed like something that would put on the possible avenues of investigation list for some super secret group in the Cold War days when they were looking into such things, if one did exist. Sounds pretty cool, huh? Don't be so sure. But for the people who ended up in that rare catastrophic state, the state I was in, it just happened to work. Coincidentally, mechanistically, like a key meant for another lock that somehow turned mine. That was the kicker. The treatment didn't save those people because they were special. It worked because their failure mode matched what the treatment reversed. They got that far because of something in their history, something baked in, and that something made the treatment not just useful, but transformative, like it reached down into the original miscalibration and hit reset. Stick around. To me, lying there, draining out, none of that mattered. The history, the possible long-term effects, the accidental fit. All I knew was that it had worked once, and if it worked for them, it could work for me. I decided I had to replicate it, whatever it was. I remember thinking I had not even lived as long as my father. I always thought I would die young, since my father did, as did his father. I just needed one more year to be his age at death, and this treatment could give me another lifetime, maybe. Maybe I could live twice as long as my father. Did I warn you about getting weird? We go higher.